if all of these accusations are true, then there's no doubt that Representative Westlake should step aside and should resign.
Sexual harassment claims aimed at a lawmaker in Juneau. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, December 6th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, scientists investigate dozens of walrus deaths in the Bering Straits region.
It's not like, oh my gosh, we have saxitoxin. It's more like, oh, okay, saxitoxin is here.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
And by
GCI, with complete technology solutions for organizations that keep Alaska's communities and economy thriving. GCI is your partner in possibilities.
Senator Lisa Murkowski has been appointed to the conference committee that will reconcile the House and Senate versions of the tax bill. Alaska Congressman Don Young also has a seat on the committee. A top goal for both of them is to ensure the bill opens the Arctic refuge to oil drilling. While Murkowski is helping President Trump achieve his tax overhaul, she's sounding a different message on immigration.
America is a land of immigrants. It's who we are. And from our farms to our hospitals to our laboratories, immigrants are helping to move our country forward.
Murkowski recorded a video to support a campaign pressing Congress to pass the DREAM Act before the end of the year. Murkowski is one of a handful of Republican sponsors of that bill. It would help non-citizens who came to the U.S. as children stay in the country. Trump has said he wants to help the Dreamers too, but he speaks more often about strong borders and putting America first. Murkowski's video, on the other hand, plugs cultural diversity, refugees, and immigrants in general.
They're lifting up our communities. They're creating American jobs. They're paying billions in taxes. They are Americans building America.
Murkowski today also joined the chorus calling for Senator Al Franken to step down following allegations he groped several women. A former Alaska House staff member has alleged two incidents of sexual harassment by Representative Dean Westlake, a Kotzebue Democrat. A report on the allegations today prompted House Speaker Bryce Edgman to encourage victims of harassment to come forward. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman has more details.
Olivia Garrett worked for Fairbanks Democratic Representative Scott Kawasaki during the legislative session this spring. She says Representative Westlake harassed her on two occasions. Garrett says she sent a letter to Speaker Edgman and House Majority Leader Chris Tuck. In it, she wrote that Westlake grabbed her and told her that her hair, quote, turned him on, unquote. On the second occasion, she says he grabbed her buttocks as she passed by. Garrett says she wrote the letter at Tuck's direction, including his instruction to include the phrase, quote, I hope we can move forward in a professional manner so no one is embarrassed or damaged, unquote. She says she never heard anything more about it from Tuck. She says she believes Tuck never showed Edgman the letter or spoke with Westlake. Tuck gave limited comment.
She's free to say that, but at this time, we are not free to respond. Because of the nature of the allegations, as well as preserving the privacy rights for future complaints coming forward.
He added that any response he made could be construed as a form of retaliation. The blog Must Read Alaska reported on the allegations Wednesday morning. Soon after the report, Edgman responded. The Dillingham Democrat says he welcomes those who've experienced harassment to bring their concerns to his office.
We don't condone this kind of activity. And we're committed to making changes in the legislature so it doesn't happen in the future.
An aide to Westlake says the representative is recovering from heart surgery he recently had and wouldn't have a comment at this time. A subcommittee is meeting Thursday with a goal of making recommendations to revise the legislature's sexual harassment policies. They were last updated in 2000. Edgman explained the subcommittee's task.
It's our intent to go back and revisit those policies and to look at the formal complaint process and certainly the informal complaint process, and to see how we can strengthen and modernize, if you will, how all that occurs.
Garrett wasn't available for a phone call on Wednesday, but she answered questions by email. She made her concerns about Westlake public at an Alaska Democratic Party meeting last week. She also raised concerns about how the party handled a separate complaint she made last year. The party then announced that it would require all candidates participating in the party's coordinated campaign next year to complete an online sexual harassment awareness course. Garrett says mandatory training is a positive step, but isn't enough. She says, quote, "I hope there are consequences for offending staff and legislators and that they're enforced," end quote. Garrett also called on Westlake to resign. She says the House majority should remove Westlake from committees and take away his staff. Alaska Democratic Party Executive Director Jay Parmley says the legislature should investigate Garrett's allegations.
If all of these accusations are true, then there's no doubt that Representative Westlake should step aside and should resign, because there's just no place for this in the legislature.
Edgman says the national attention on harassment could prove to be a watershed moment in reducing harassment.
I think we ought to seize the moment and do whatever we can to make sure that we can change the culture going forward.
The Sexual Harassment Policy Subcommittee is expected to submit recommendations before the next legislative session starts. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Alaska Republican Party leaders voted Saturday to block Homer Representative Paul Seaton, Anchorage Representative Gabrielle Ledoux, and Representative Louise Stutes of Kodiak from running in the 2018 Republican primaries. All three representatives joined Democrats and independents last fall to form a bipartisan coalition, taking control of the House away from Republicans. The Republican Party's State Central Committee says that violated a party rule about caucusing with other political parties.
The two penalties for that at the time are no financial support or access to our database, and also granting the Republican Party the freedom to try to recruit a challenger.
That's Alaska Republican Chairman Tuckerman Babcock. Babcock says Saturday's vote is an expansion of last year's decision. He says a court ruling in October, which says independents can run in Democratic primaries, also allows the Republican Party to block individuals from running as its nominee if they violate that party rule. Representative Seaton says he hasn't officially heard from the party about its decision and wasn't made aware of Saturday's vote.
You know, I just don't think that this actually comports with state law, that people can excise people from their party, or that they can say, yes, you're in the party, but we're disallowing you personally from being able to run.
Babcock wrote a letter to the State Division of Elections on Monday, alerting Director Josie Banky of the party's decision. Rule changes for the 2018 primaries were due in September, so it's unclear whether the state will honor the change or decide it doesn't comply with state law. Banky, in an email, said the division plans to make its decision within a week. The state has also appealed the October ruling to the Alaska Supreme Court, which could complicate the outcome. Babcock says the party knows the decision could go either way.
We'll see how things unfold, and we don't know if we'll join with the Democratic Party in the defense of the decision. We don't know if we'll go to federal court, and we don't know if we'll just accept the state's decision and just state our position and let the voters decide.
Seaton, Ledoux, and Stutes could still run as Republicans next fall if they're blocked from the primaries. Each would need to collect signatures in order to do so. They could also run as an independent or join another party's ticket. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a unique mom-and-pop timber operation is thriving on Prince of Wales Island using salvaged wood.
We'd always make fun of my dad because he's been doing it for years, and he'd get all excited and run back and go, "I want to check it out," and everything. And we're like, "You're just such a goofball." But, you know, now we see.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Do you need health insurance for next year? Did you know Alaska's individual market health insurance rates have dropped by more than 20% for 2018? More than 90% of Alaskans who sign up at healthcare.gov are eligible for tax credits to help pay the costs. Open enrollment is November 1st through December 15th of this year. Check out healthcare.gov to find out what your insurance options are for 2018. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
This year, in a move heralded by Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke as large and unprecedented, the Trump administration offered the most land ever to oil companies in Alaska's National Petroleum Reserve. 900 tracts, totaling more than 10 million acres, were up for bid. But at the annual lease sale held today, only 7 of the 900 tracts received bids. The sale lasted less than 10 minutes. In a call with reporters after the sale, Ted Murphy of the Bureau of Land Management said there's never a guarantee that oil companies will be interested.
Well, we never know exactly how industry is going to react to the number of tracts made available. Lease sale interest is unpredictable.
Oil companies ConocoPhillips and Anadarko jointly bid on all 7 tracts that sold. They are located in the eastern part of the reserve, bordering land Conoco is already leasing and developing. No other companies placed bids. The sum of all bids was just over $1 million, an underwhelming result compared to last year's sale, which raked in close to $19 million. Tim Bradner, co-publisher of the Alaska Economic Report, says it's possible ConocoPhillips is already leasing the lion's share of the available land in the reserve with the most oil potential. Bradner says there is oil potential in other parts of the reserve, commonly called NPRA, but that land is currently off limits.
The really good stuff in the NPRA, from a geologic perspective, was not on the table this morning.
Much of that land surrounds Teshikpuk Lake. The Obama administration decided not to allow oil development there because it's habitat for migratory birds and caribou. Environmental groups want that land to stay protected, but the Trump administration is considering opening up more of the area to oil development. There was also an oil and gas lease sale for state land and waters on and near the North Slope today. Officials saw that as a success. The state received more than $21 million in high bids. That's over $3 million more than last year's sale, which was also considered a success.
We feel that the competitive nature of today's bidding is very, very good for the state of Alaska, and it rings loudly that people are interested.
That was Chantel Walsh, director of the Division of Oil and Gas at Alaska's Department of Natural Resources. The Spanish oil company Repsol was one of the most aggressive bidders at the state sale. Repsol is one of the companies behind a 1.2 billion barrel oil discovery announced on the North Slope this spring. Many of Repsol's bids were south of that discovery. In the Bering Straits region, 39 dead walrus washed ashore and were documented in various communities between mid-August and the end of September. What caused these walruses to die is still unknown. KNOM's Davis Hovey reports on what little is known about this occurrence and what else is a mystery.
Months ago, community members from Diomede and Shishmaref were asked to take samples from 4 walruses' intestines. Gabe Sheffield, a marine biologist with Alaska Sea Grant based in Nome, helped coordinate all the involved agencies to find out more about this marine mammal stranding event.
Only one of the walruses was harvested and fresh. The others, they were decomposing, and the samples we needed to get were intestinal contents and or stomach contents. That's where you can actually pick up these biotoxins. And so it was a fantastic effort on the part of these communities to get the samples that they did. Why only 4? At Shishmaref, they were in extremely remote locations up and down the beach. And also at Diomede, there weren't many samples to be had.
According to Sheffield, 3 of the walruses had low to moderate levels of saxitoxin, while the 4th one had high levels of saxitoxin. Saxitoxin is a biotoxin that is produced by algae and is potentially a poisonous substance.
The harvested animal from Diomede, whose intestinal content was over 800 nanograms per gram. So not that anyone would be eating the intestinal contents of a walrus. However, presumably that came from the stomach.
Based on a U.S. Food and Drug Administration seafood safety regulation, consuming shellfish with more than 800 nanograms of saxitoxin per gram can harm humans and potentially cause paralytic shellfish poisoning, or PSP. Louisa Castrodale, an epidemiologist with the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, explains that when people eat shellfish that is not commercially sold, there is a risk of PSP.
I mean, there's always a potential just because we can see saxitoxin in shellfish throughout the year. There's always a concern for paralytic shellfish poisoning and impact of those toxins with consumption of recreationally harvested shellfish. So that hasn't changed based on this.
However, as Castrodale points out, even though this walrus tested positive for saxitoxin levels above the federal regulatory limit, it does not necessarily mean there's a human health issue.
Saxitoxin doesn't tend to go to those types of tissues, blubber and meat and muscle. So then if you do find it in intestines, what do we know about walrus and what do we know about those tissues that we would think, does the case still hold that you wouldn't find it in those tissues? Or is there something different? We don't know that, but we just have the published literature that says that doesn't happen.
Sheffield says finding saxitoxins in walrus is not new for subsistence hunters in western Alaska.
We've tested for it for the very first time in 2012 and 2013, and we found it. And it's not that it was novel to walruses or new to our region. It's that it was new to science in that it was the first time it had been looked for. And we found it. It's not like, oh my gosh, we have saxitoxin. It's more like, oh, okay, saxitoxin is here.
What is new for Sheffield and other marine mammal experts is finding algae blooms in Alaskan waters and an increased presence of algal biotoxins in walrus and other animals. For now, the one harvested walrus from Diomede is still being tested at a lab in Seattle, as it had levels of saxitoxin that maxed out the machine used to test it. But Sheffield believes when that number is known, it will offer some more insight into this marine mammal mystery. Reporting in Nome, I'm Davis Havi.
Members of the Anchorage Assembly took a small step toward addressing complaints about how the city handles homeless camps. At its Tuesday night meeting, the body voted unanimously to lower the number of days between when notice is served by police that a camp is illegal and when city employees start dismantling it. Previously, it was 15 days. Under the new law, it is 10. The camp abatement policy is often cited by frustrated property owners and trail users who say it takes too long between when an illegal camp is reported and when it is ultimately cleaned up. Some of those who testified to the assembly don't see the step as making much of a difference. Alan Williams told assembly members he believes tightening the eviction timeline by a few days doesn't fix problems for property owners or for people experiencing homelessness.
When you're chasing the homeless from campsite to campsite, you're not really doing anything unless you give them someplace where they can go.
Assembly members agree the rule change is hardly a silver bullet. As the proposal has been modified in recent weeks, language has been added that points to more comprehensive efforts undertaken by city officials to find long-term housing options. A spokesperson for the American Civil Liberties Union Alaska says the organization is still reviewing the new rule before deciding whether to challenge its legality. In the past, the ACLU and other critics have alleged that banning camping outright on public lands without sufficient housing alternatives amounts to unconstitutionally criminalizing homelessness.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska is now through Friday, December 15th. Enrollment assistance is available and it's free. Visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Authorities have identified two men reported missing after a skiff overturned in Juneau's Gastineau Channel. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports.
The Coast Guard says the skiff, loaded with three men, two women, and a dog, was headed to the Lumberman, a 107-foot tug anchored near Juneau's Aurora Harbor. It overturned in rough weather. Two of the women were able to swim to shore. One of them got in a second boat and tried to rescue their companions. A Coast Guard lifeboat was able to find one of the men. Two of the Juno men were last seen Tuesday night. They are 50-year-old James Cole and 48-year-old Sheridan Scott Stringer. Lieutenant Nicholas Kabuzi says hope for the two is fading.
There is a chance they may have made it back to shore, potentially, and just fallen out of the public eye. So if we're encouraging any members of the public who may have had interactions with either of these gentlemen.
Juno's harbor master, David Borg, says the lumberman has acted as a liveaboard for years. It's anchored in navigable waters outside the port's jurisdiction.
Right now, from what I understand, there might be several people living out there on the boat, but I'm not certain. They aren't required to register with us, whether they're, they don't pay to be moored or anchored out there either. So we don't really, there's no requirement for them to report that to us.
It's unclear whether anyone on the overturned skiff lived on the lumberman. One of the missing men, James Cole, was among the tenants displaced after the historic Bergman Hotel was condemned by the city earlier this year. City Housing Officer Scott Shambor said liveaboards have long filled a niche in Juneau's tight housing market.
People frequently use them, by choice or due to economic conditions. So, yeah, it's not surprising that there's a lot of people living on boats there in Juneau.
Harbor officials are working to address issues of liveaboards anchored long-term in the channel. Borg says the issue has been apparent since the Challenger, a historic wooden tug, sank in 2015 and had to be salvaged at great expense.
After the Challenger sank and the huge sum of money it cost to raise that, we are starting to look at the regulations to address vessels anchoring and or mooring long-term in our tideland areas, and we will be addressing that over our next harbor operations meeting next week.
The dog is being cared for by animal control. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
The last sizable timber mill in the state has struggled to find enough trees to keep the saws running. But down the road, a small mom-and-pop operation is thriving with a unique business model. Alaska Specialty Woods uses salvaged trees to make acoustic instrument tops, which are shipped all around the world. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story of how this sustainable company wants the timber industry to stick around.
Near the end of a windy gravel road, Brent Cole Jr. fires up a chainsaw. With his dark hair piled into a bun, he runs the blade through an enormous log sitting on the ground. His brother is next to him, cutting the section into smaller and smaller chunks. The tree they're slicing has been dead for decades. It's salvaged from an old logging raft that was used to transport heavy machinery in a bygone era. This is how the family business gets its wood, from bridges no longer used on old logging roads to trees that have been blown down or are dead standing. Cole Jr. says there are millions of acres in the Tongass National Forest, and finding these trees can be like a scavenger hunt.
We'd always make fun of my dad because he's been doing it for years, and he'd get all excited and run back and go, I want to check it out and everything, and we're like, you're just such a goofball, but, now we see.
And if you spend enough time with his dad, Brent Cole Sr., it's obvious how that enthusiasm could rub off. At his workshop a few towns over from the log yard, Cole Sr. shows me a thin, blonde piece of wood.
Some of the character that's in these boards, this here has got indented grain. And look at the loud visual energy of that.
What is loud visual energy?
That's just what you're looking at. It goes, wow!
The trees have a story to tell. Take that logging raft, for example. It's riddled with holes from a worm-like mollusk. Other pieces of wood have a gray tinge, the result of mineral exposure from being buried in the soil. Cole Sr. embraces those imperfections and shapes the wood into tops for acoustic instruments, like guitars. The workshop doesn't have any finished instruments lying around. Cole Sr. jokes that he only plays the bandsaw. So he taps on a piece of Sitka spruce to show me why it's sought after by nearly every guitar maker. Oh, you can hear it vibrating. Can you do that again?
Yeah.
Cole Sr. used to drive trucks for a big logging company on Prince of Wales Island. Then he started his own business back in the early 90s, Alaska Specialty Woods. At first, it was just a matter of buying whatever he could get his hands on. And for a small operation, that usually meant buying individual trees from the Tongass National Forest. Most of that was salvaged, some of it was cut down.
But in 2014, he says it became nearly impossible to find any living Sitka spruce that wasn't already off limits in the Tongass.
We just said, no, this is what we're going to do. We will just be the salvage people.
Alaska Specialty Woods now produces as many as 10,000 guitar tops a year, shipping them to 80 different countries. They have brand-name customers like Gibson Guitars. And Cole Sr. says he knows, at least on the surface, being the salvage people could look like a more eco-friendly way of doing business, especially at a time when clear-cutting the big trees remains up in the air. The U.S. Forest Service wants to end old-growth logging in the Tongass National Forest. It could be the death of a larger neighboring mill, the last of its kind in the state. But Cole Sr. says, here's the thing.
For us, it really behooves us, Alaska Specialty Woods, and our customers, if there is an active timber industry here.
Through the years, Alaska Specialty Woods and Viking Lumber have used the same barges. They've flown the same helicopters to remove logs in the Tongass. Cole Sr. says if the big mill closes, that would be bad for his business. Still, he doesn't want to see the region return entirely to its past logging days.
I want to see a slowdown of the amount of old growth clear-cutted, but I also want to see a transition from a management for that.
Which, he says, means the bigger mill should have longer to adapt. Unlike Alaska Specialty Woods, Viking Lumber doesn't make its own niche products. The company mills the wood on the island and ships the boards to the lower 48. Cole Sr. has invited Viking to stop by and see his operation. In the meantime, he says he gets why people are concerned about the Tongass. But he says the local economy should be able to flourish too.
Yeah, they got good ideas and good intentions. Save the planet. But I think there's common ground in using common sense and utilization, and I think it can do it all.
Cole Sr. doesn't think the timber industry will ever be as big as it once was in the region. But like his guitar tops, he says the wood in the Tongass still has a story to tell. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Craig.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman, Jacob Resnick, and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Elizabeth Harbaugh and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Aaron Bolton in Homer, and Davis Hovey in Nome. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The U.S. Bureau of Land Management, the lead federal agency, is hosting a series of public scoping meetings on the proposed Ambler Road. The meetings are now through Tuesday, December 12th, in several communities near the Ambler Mining District. The BLM is developing an environmental impact statement and seeking public input. Learn more at blm.gov/AmblerRoadEIS. This message is sponsored by BLM.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.